Celebrating the reign of Britain's Queen Elizabeth II, the UK puts on an exceptional show to honour her 70 years on the throne. But some countries are rethinking their ties with the monarchy. So why do they want to break up with the Queen? This is Inside Story. Hello and welcome to the programme. I am Hashim Ahlbarra. She is Britain's longest reigning monarch, and the UK has gone all out for Queen Elizabeth II. Four days of pomp and pageantry to mark her historic Platinum Jubilee. Hundreds of thousands of people descended on London to be part of the festivities. But even as the 96-year-old is celebrated at home, in some countries, this milestone has renewed debate about whether to sever ties with Britain's royalty. The Queen is the head of the Commonwealth, which is made up of 54 independent countries. Nearly all of them were once under British rule. As well as the United Kingdom, she's also monarch of 14 other countries, including Canada and Australia. They're known as Commonwealth realms. Eight are in the Caribbean. All are independent and sovereign states. But she's recognised as a ceremonial ruler and the head of state, but has no real power. The royal family has long been a source of British soft power and diplomatic influence. Several Caribbean countries like Jamaica and the Bahamas have indicated they want to part ways with the Queen. They're considering removing her as their head of state. Barbados did that last year, saying it was time to leave its colonial past behind. But the island is still part of the Commonwealth. Let's bring in our panel of guests. From Warwickshire, Philip Murphy is Director of History and Policy at the Institute of Historical Research. From Birmingham, Brené Landell is a doctoral researcher in Caribbean studies at the Royal Holloway University of London. Her grandparents were part of what's known as the Windrush generation in the UK. From Nairobi, Patrick Gathara is a political commentator and a journalist. Welcome to the programme. Philip, this whole debate, this particular time during this Platinum Jubilee about the monarchy, its future, whether or not people should care about the celebration and whether the royal extravaganza is any more relevant. Could it be an indication of a public shift or a shift in the public sentiment towards the monarchy?
I think there are different things happening elsewhere in the realms. And there's clearly a major shift going on in the Caribbean. And it, as you suggested, it was sparked by Barbados becoming a republic in November. And that in turn was on the back of a revival in the Black Lives Matter movement in the United States following the death of George Floyd. Controversy of the Windrush scandal and the treatment of people of Caribbean heritage in the UK. And the growing movement for reparations for slavery and colonialism. So there's a strong Republican movement in the Caribbean at the moment, far less so in the United Kingdom. Support for the monarchy is still relatively high at around 70%, with only a minority, about 22%, supporting a republic. But even in the UK, there are differences in that. So support for the monarchy is less strong in Scotland, slightly less strong in Wales.
Mm-hmm. René, if we stay in the UK, you see that within the younger generation there is a prevailing sentiment that the monarchy is somehow disconnected from reality. Could be an indication that the monarchy itself has one day to reinvent itself to be able to build bridges with the different components of the society.
Yes, no, you're right. I would say that the younger generations now are really considering some of the global issues that are happening. One of them more closely to home being the Windrush scandal and how it has affected, you know, its legacies and how it has affected people even in the UK. And so I believe that now what we are seeing a shift from the monarchy towards a republic on several fronts, particularly as you're saying with the younger generation. This is a generation where we are not afraid to speak out and to address our concerns. And as the previous speaker has already said, the call for reparations is getting louder. And it is significant to me that in 2022, there are people, specifically in the Caribbean, still waiting for an apology. So even moving away from reparations and getting to action, but just a simple apology. And I believe that this Jubilee would have been the perfect opportunity.
Mm-hmm. Patrick, is it the same sentiment in Kenya, which joined the Commonwealth in 1963, that it's about time to rethink ties with the monarchy?
Well, Kenya has been a republic since 1964, so we quickly cut ties with the monarchy very soon after independence, a year after independence. But that said, I think there is a movement here, there is a sentiment, I would say, here, that the things that went on during, especially the final days of colonialism, especially during the Mau Mau conflict, our independence war, have essentially been hidden under the carpet. You remember that the British took off with lots of the documents. They stole lots of the documents that were in our archives, in the colonial archives. They burnt and distorted others. And they have tried for a very long time to hide that history. They hid these documents even from their own courts. And I think for us, the most important thing to begin with is to recover that truth, is to recover the truth about what happened during colonialism, the effect that it had, before we can even move into a discussion about reparations. I think it's really, really important that people start understanding. We have generations that have grown up without any knowledge about what happened during colonialism. And this is not just the fault of the British, it's the fault of our own government that has essentially tried to tamp down on the teaching of history because it's afraid that it's going to lose legitimacy.
Philip, you spoke earlier about Scotland. Is it fair to say that this is going to just pave the way for more Republican sentiment to continue growing in Scotland?
I think what's really paved the way for a renewed move to Scottish independence is Brexit, and there was an argument: what is the benefit of Scottish independence? Well, if an independent Scotland could rejoin the European Union, that would be a very great benefit for it. And I think the problem the monarchy has in the UK and globally is that it tends to do best during what you might call periods of consensus. And Britain at the moment is a deeply divided country, particularly over the fallout from Brexit. And it's starting to fracture the United Kingdom. And the world itself is deeply divided. I mean, the movement for reparations is a product of that, and a kind of a realization that decades after independence, those inequalities still exist.
Mm-hmm. René, you spoke about the Windrush scandal and how it shaped the sentiment among Caribbean people. Do you see this as a pivotal moment that could, in a way, influence the path that the other Caribbean countries will take in the near future, particularly when it comes to dropping out the Queen as their head of state?
Yes, well, I would say that the celebrations that are happening in Britain is not the same or quite the same as what's going on in the Caribbean. We saw with the royal visits, with William and Kate visiting several Caribbean countries, including Belize and Jamaica. They were met with much protest and calls for, as I said before, reparations and even just merely an apology. But the Windrush scandal is, again, just another, you know, violence or repetition of imperial violence from the British that has caused this kind of reckoning within ourselves as you know, different generations rising up. I believe that Jamaica's already in talks with, you know, moving towards becoming a republic, following the footsteps of Barbados. And there are several other countries too, including the Bahamas, St. Kitts and Nevis, all now seriously taking this conversation seriously about removing the Queen as their head of state. And I believe that that is in their best interest. Of course, we know that with becoming a republic, there are some things that you gain and there mm-hmm. there may be some things that you lose. And so that's a conversation that they really need to be having now and considering and weighing up the balance.
Patrick, Kenya severed ties with the monarchy in 1964, but remained part of the Commonwealth. Memories of the atrocities committed against many former colonies are still there, particularly during the War of Independence. Could this be the moment for a reset of relations between former British colonies in African continent?
It could, but to be quite honest, I think the Jubilee is a missed opportunity. There's lots of focus on the pomp and the celebration, and kind of the whitewashing, if you will, of the colonial past, of the colonial history. So there's lots of talk about how, for example, Elizabeth ascended to the throne while she was on a trip in Kenya, and there's this romanticized tale of how she went up a tree as a princess and descended as a queen. But it's not, again, contextualized, because at the time that she was here is when the struggle for freedom was going on, you know. And in her first years, her reign, in the first 7 years of her reign, the British are committing really terrible atrocities here, which they were forced to acknowledge when they were sued by Mau veterans. So I think there is a lost opportunity to have an honest conversation about what happened, about what the British did, mm-hmm. you know, that would then mean that we can contextualize, you know, things like the Jubilee. What should it mean to people like us who are here, who are watching this celebration, you know, our tales being included in this, you know, and is our suffering being reflected, you know, in the discussions that are being mm-hmm. had. You know, lots of this sort of celebration of the pomp and circumstance seems to me to be just a throwback to sort of the faded glory of empire, you know, but a refusal to acknowledge that it really committed really terrible things to lots of people around the world, mm-hmm. not just Kenyans.
Philip, historians say that when it comes to the Commonwealth realms, the Queen is just holds a ceremonial role as a head of state. How would you explain the decision by the Australian Prime Minister, Anthony Albanese, to appoint the country's first assistant minister for the Republic? Do you see just a symbolic move, something that could have far-reaching geopolitical consequences for the standing of Britain itself?
Well, I mean, it's really a question for the people of Australia as it is for the people of any of the realms. And it's worth saying that the palace has never tried to fight a rearguard action to preserve the realms. The important thing for the Queen and for the palace is that those countries remain in the Commonwealth, and the most Commonwealth countries are republics anyway. So it wouldn't affect the Commonwealth in that way. The point about what's happening in Australia at the moment is, of course, there was a referendum back in 1999 in Australia, and the Republican cause lost, largely because Australians didn't like the form of presidency that was on offer in place of the monarchy. And that's often the problem when you get into these debates. There is probably a majority in Australia at the moment for the principle of a republic. But the question is, what sort of republic? So that's why I think the new administration in Australia is doing some preparatory work, probably thinking about how that might be done, whether you have a referendum on the principle of a republic and then move on to think about what form the new constitution should take, or whether you do it all in one go. But it's also a risk for the new government because it will need a referendum if Australia is to become a republic. Mm-hmm. And we know, and the Australians know, that those are unpredictable things, and governments can also often lose them.
René, with at least six Caribbean countries saying that they would like to follow suit with Barbados when it comes to severing ties with the monarchy, that decision, is it, how do you see it, retaliatory act because of identity, because of history, or just a message to the monarchy that, you know what, it's about time for us to carve up our own destiny?
Yes, I wouldn't even say it's about time. I would say that it's long overdue. The shadow of slavery, or rather the legacies of slavery, which these are things that we're still fighting and seeing today, in terms of poverty, in terms of inadequate healthcare, the low enrollment into education. These are all, you know, consequences or implications of slavery. And I believe now that these six Caribbean countries and who are now, you know, really taking seriously this conversation, are really now considering everything that they could possibly gain by becoming a republic. Some may say that removing removing the crown or the crown itself is just symbolic, but I argue that even symbolic power is power, because symbols give out messages to the world. What are we communicating, and what do we believe in? And this is really, really important when you're thinking about, you know, civic engagement, when you're thinking about liberty and you're thinking about just laws. And so for these six countries who are now having these discussions, it will be an opportunity to think about, you know, how can we benefit and weigh up, as I said before, against the things that they may lose. Of course, you know, we can expect that the tourist industry, for example, mm-hmm. may face a particular or further decline. You know, British tourists may now decide that they don't want to holiday in Barbados anymore. Mm-hmm. And there's also a question about government insufficiency. Is this person fit for this purpose? But there are many benefits to becoming a republic. As I said before, increased liberty and just laws. It's an opportunity an opportunity to rebalance power between government and its people. And so removing the crown as head of state, just as Barbados has done, mm-hmm. will be something where the rest of these Caribbean countries can have their own true independence, because we know that they've had independence before, but true independence where they can show the world who they want to be and reshape themselves.
Patrick, what are the advantages for Kenya to stay in the Commonwealth? Is it the platform, the financial incentives? Or do you think that perhaps because of this growing call for countries to stay out from the Commonwealth, widely seen as anachronistic, that could decide its fate in the future?
Well, I think the Commonwealth has been an institution that's been there, sort of binding these countries together, forging, in many cases, our commonalities, common values. You know, they can put pressure on authoritarian regimes, for example, to moderate their ways or to change their ways. You know, so there are benefits to being part of the Commonwealth. However, I agree with René that the symbolism of it is quite problematic, and I think there is a case to be made that the monarchy and the Commonwealth are institutions that symbolize still a world where that is dominated, if you will, mm-hmm. by the British, you know. And I think that symbolism needs to go away. We've got to remember the monarchy is just a tip of the iceberg. I mean, colonialism was an entire system, and lots of what I mean, what it ran on still remains. You know, the most of the whether it's how we trade, what we are allowed to export, you know, etc. All of these things still remain. You know, so when we are talking about the monarchy and the Commonwealth, we've got to understand them as part of a system. And I think that until we can actually have a conversation about what that system is, what it has done, the problems it has wreaked, you know, across countries. Renee mentioned about how the legacy of slavery, which is similar to the legacy of colonialism, you know, where you have these countries that have one crop economies, you know, that can't seem to get out of the poverty trap. They were essentially set up as looting enterprises by the British, and that has never changed. And until we can have these discussions, then we can actually start moving on and asking, why do we need these symbols of essentially British power, British control, such as the Commonwealth and the monarchy?
Okay. Philip, you mentioned earlier Brexit and its impact on particularly the rise of independence sentiment in Scotland. Brexit itself, to what extent has it played a role in the widening rift between Britain and its former colonies?
I don't know whether it's had very much impact at all. I mean, there was a slight expectation in some quarters that with Brexit, the Commonwealth would become more important to the UK. But it's not really the case, and it's not really clear why that should be. I mean, the British have done one or two symbolic trade deals with Commonwealth countries, with Australia, for example. But it really hasn't been clear to British governments for 60 years now how they could really make the Commonwealth work to Britain's advantage. And it's still not clear. And I think, you know, you've seen a British Prime Minister, Boris Johnson, being chair in office of the Commonwealth over the last few years, not really doing anything with the organisation at all. So, I mean, I think there's probably former British colonies, like much of the rest of the world, show a certain amount of bemusement about this sort of act of self-harm that Britain has inflicted on itself. But I think it certainly hasn't strengthened relations in any way.
René, in times of crisis, the royal family has always been sending its popular members to build bridges, win the hearts and minds of people in the former colonies. Could it still work in places like Jamaica?
No, I don't believe it can, because when you consider not even the history, because when we talk about slavery and colonialism, we speak very temporal, but we have to be conscious of its legacies, the things that we're still seeing today, you know, neocolonialism, if you want to call it that. And so, as I said before, even if it is just symbolic, that is still power and it sends a very strong message. And in the case of Barbados, for example, having a Barbadian head of state is part of that process of decolonization, which is so necessary to move forward so that we're not having these same conversations or so that history isn't repeating itself, which it so often does. And so, no, I don't believe that it can operate or should operate in the way it has been. Of course, you know, in this country, the Queen is much beloved. But I feel like, and one of the previous speakers spoke about this so wonderfully, I feel like when we just celebrate, merely to celebrate, we're often continuing the erasure of Britain's involvement, not only in slavery, but in colonialism and the continued imperial violence by Britain. We've spoken a lot about Kenya, and most people aren't even conscious of the fact that concentration camps in Kenya was only in the 50s. It's not that long ago. And so, and these were all of these treacherous acts were all during the Queen's reign and her predecessors, if you want to go that far back. So I believe it's in the best interest for the Anglophone Caribbean to become a republic. It may be a scary thought, mm-hmm. standing on your own when you've been so dependent in a way for so long, but it's about reshaping now, even for a better global ecology, even thinking about climate change. When we talk about reparations, we don't really consider climate mm-hmm. change, but climate reparations is part of this conversation and it benefits us all.
As you said earlier, even if it was a debate about symbols, symbols still carry a historical weight. Philip Murphy, Rennie Landell, Patrick Gathara, thank you very much indeed. And thank you too for watching. You can see the programme again anytime by visiting our website, aljazeera.com, for further discussion. Go to our Facebook page, that's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. You can also join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle is @AJInsideStory. From me, Hashim Ahlbala, and the entire team here in Doha. Bye for now.